There are some frightening critters in the world, like mama grizzlies, hungry great white sharks, and rampaging elephants, but none of them are more devastating than the tiny little mosquito. And that leads us to ask, how can we fight off those blood-sucking mosquitoes?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1231st edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Fremantle who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, as anyone who has watched Shark Week can attest, few creatures can match the killing ferocity of the great white shark. That said, sharks of all kinds only kill about 10 people a year. The most ferocious killer on Earth kills at least 725,000 people every year. Incidentally, the second biggest killer of people is other people, who kill an estimated 475,000 people a year. The world's most ferocious killer of people is the mosquito. What makes the mosquito so dangerous is not its bite or sting, as it does neither, but rather its probe. That probe is not sharp and rigid like a needle. It's flexible and bendable. The mosquito uses that probe to search for the blood vein beneath the skin, and when it finds one, it inserts that probe and begins sucking up the blood. What makes the mosquito probe so dangerous is that it transmits and spreads diseases the mosquito has picked up from other victims. Those diseases include chikungunya, I think I said that right, dengue fever, encephalitis, malaria, West Nile, yellow fever, and Zika. In vectoring these diseases, the tiny little mosquito kills upwards of 750,000 people every year. And so we ask, how can we fight off those blood-sucking mosquitoes? Here to help us swat a few of the pernicious pests, we have Ken Clemmie, who is the manager of the Northern Salinas Valley Mosquito Abatement District. Ken, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Show.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
Good to have you aboard. So, quick question. Does anybody have anything good to say about mosquitoes?
No. Actually, there is one mosquito. It's really, really, it's gorgeous. It's pretty. It's got really iridescent wings. Some districts have them, but they come from the tropical rainforest, so you could imagine they're pretty colorful. That's the only good thing I've ever heard. Everybody else hates them. Absolutely.
So of how many species of mosquitoes are there?
Roughly 3,500 species across the world. Not all mosquitoes need blood to make their babies, but some can just use nectar, stuff like that, eat fruit.
So of the 3,500 species of mosquito, one of those species, people have one good thing to say about, which is that it's pretty. But that's the extent of the goodwill for mosquitoes, right?
That's it.
Well, how did Ken Clemmie go on to become a man among mosquitoes as the managing abater of mosquitoes for Northern Salinas Valley Mosquito District?
Well, one doesn't set out in life and say...
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, one, you don't set out in life and say, I want to go kill mosquitoes. I mean, the job kind of finds you. And right after college, I had earned my bachelor's in biology, and I just started putting my resume out everywhere and just trying to, I went to little offices and just handed it out everywhere. And I wasn't really hearing anything back from anybody, but then the mosquito district called back. This was in Salma, California. And they called back and they said, hey, would you like to count mosquitoes? And I'm like scratching my head. What do you mean count mosquitoes? How on earth would you ever do that? You know, count them in the sky? I mean, how do you do that? But then once I got hired, they showed me, you know, no, you use, you know, we would use dry ice. We put it into a trap And what the dry ice does is it attracts the mosquitoes. And so from there, I really enjoyed the job. And we would test the mosquitoes for disease and all that kind of stuff. And so they said, Ken, this thing called West Nile is going to happen, and we want to hire you on full time and go out in the field. You're too tall of a guy to be underneath the microscope. We could really use your help out in the field. I was like, sure, you know, that sounds great to me. And they gave me some equipment. I'd have quads, and, you know, out in the Central Valley, it's all flood irrigation. So you have just pastures and, you know, all kinds of stuff to treat. And I just found it a really rewarding job. And then from there, just kind of worked my way up the ranks. So I've been doing this since 2002-ish, 2003. And I've enjoyed it ever since.
Now you're the main man. Well, let me ask you about a mosquito abatement district. In a brief scan of the website, I see where the people got together and decided that we have to do something about mosquitoes. So they voted right to tax themselves to set up an abatement district. What exactly is it, an abatement district then?
So California has what is called special districts. There's many special districts. There are very efficient forms of government. They're not these big bloated bureaucracies. And they have one task, and that one task is what they specialize in. It could be water, it could be sewage, it could be fire. I mean, there's many types of different special districts. I mean, you could look up the list and you'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe somebody does, you know, that, just that, you know. And so that's what we do. We just, our job is to protect public health from people getting bit by mosquitoes. And so, go ahead.
So you're one government agency that people like to see coming.
We are. People do enjoy us. You know, we go around their house, we educate them, we show them what they can do. And they do like us. Some people are skeptical at first, you know, they think we're going to charge them or something like that. But once they figure out we're just really here to help, that then, you know, they're our friends.
Do other states have similar kind of districts? I would suspect, you know, Florida might have mosquito abatement districts as well.
Yes, Florida has big districts. You know, they do a lot of flying of pesticides, and especially down in the wetland areas. It's just, I heard one pilot say that, you know, they just wait for the mosquitoes to hatch and then they just spray the heck out of them. It's just a really different terrain down there.
Yeah.
And,
well, before we go on to the critter that is eating us, is it fair to say that the mosquito is eating us alive, or is it just my imagination?
Eating us alive?
Yes. When they suck our blood out of us. Isn't it?
I've never thought about it that way. They truly are eating us alive.
Well, before we go on and focus on them, there's one other critter that does this pretty much the same thing, and that's the tick. And I'm wondering, which do you think is most dangerous, the tick or the mosquito?
That's a toss-up, you know. You know, with Lyme disease and everything, and a lot of people are suffering with that. I don't know. I think the mosquito causes more devastation, but as far as Lyme disease, you know, people are suffering with that for years and years and years. So I don't know, quick death or long-term suffrage. It's not really
much of a choice, horrible. Right? Not much of a choice.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at the mosquito really quickly. 2,500 species or so, give or take, in the world. And how many here in the United States?
Oh, got to be a couple hundred. We have 18 here in this county. And they have all different biting behaviors. They have different sources that they like to breed in. Some prefer really smelly water. And those you'll find in, like, street drains. Septic tanks, just water that sits around for a long time. And they're drawn to that stinky water because, you know, it lets them know that their children are going to be safe. They're going to have a nice place to grow up. And, you know, the other type out here, and this is the reason our district was initiated, was once the harbor district was made in the 50s, it changed the whole ecology of the Elkhorn Slough. And
which is
and
one
so
of the,
what happened,
which is one of the California's biggest estuaries.
Yeah, right. And so what happened was saltwater mosquitoes started taking hold of that area. And saltwater mosquitoes have a little different laying egg behavior. They lay their eggs in soil, and they can sit there for, you know, 5-10 years. And then when the conditions are right, they hatch. And so every time the tide would come in and out, you could imagine, you know, it just became increasingly more and more and more mosquitoes out there. These type fly 25 miles so they could come into town and just bite the heck out of everybody. So real estate prices dropped dramatically, or nothing could sell. Nobody wanted to live out there. And then I heard from some old timers that the tractors wouldn't even run out there, that you would have to put gunny sacks over the intakes to keep the mosquitoes from clogging up the tractors. So it was a huge problem, and that's when the people gathered together and voted in the mosquito district.
Well, I noted another problem similar to that on the island of Ibiza. It just came into the news recently with the COVID-19 situation. The hotels quit tending their swimming pools and just let them sit. And there's an Asian tiger mosquito, I believe it's called, that took over the swimming pools and is now running all the people out of Ibiza.
Wow.
So they take over pretty quickly, don't they?
The Asian tiger mosquito likes to lay its eggs in like flower pot type situations where there's a little bit of water and the water comes in and out like the tide, you know, and it, so they'll lay their eggs in buckets and they'll just wait for the water to come. And so we do have Asian tiger mosquito down in Southern California and kind of up the Central Valley. And they're a really miserable mosquito because they like to cohabitate with people, so they want to come inside, and you'll be watching TV, and basically they'll just be attacking you while you're watching TV.
And I understand they're four times the size of a normal mosquito.
I don't know. I thought they were a little smaller than some of the species, but they got the name tiger mosquito is because they actually kind of stalk you. And funny story that I heard about the guys in L.A. who do this. They said that they found a Keurig breeding with Asian tiger mosquitoes. So that was it for me. I think I'd heard it all at that point. I mean, a Keurig.
Okay, folks, we will be right back. Do stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, this is the Food Chain. Today we're talking about the most pernicious pest of all in terms of fatalities to the human race. 750,000 people every year are killed by this little tiny monster called the mosquito. And so the question we have on the table today is, how can we fight off those blood-sucking mosquitoes? And with us to help swat a few, we have Ken Clemmie, who is the manager of the Northern Salinas Valley Mosquito Abatement District. And so that's what Ken does for a living, is he kills mosquitoes. Can you imagine applying for a job that has you going out into mosquito country and waiting around? And my goodness, how do you deal with it out there, Ken? Big question, how do you protect yourself when you're out there in the swamps chasing down skeeters?
Well, it's hard because, you know, we try to wear DEET when we can, but if they get away from us, you know, we're obviously exposed to that. But I'm not too concerned about mosquitoes that are biting me in the day. We don't have any species that would transmit disease during the day. and they're just really aggressive mosquitoes that leave nasty welts. So I'm okay with that.
So there are some mosquitoes that bite during the day and they don't transmit diseases, and there are mosquitoes that bite you at night and they do transmit diseases. Is that what I heard?
That's what you heard. There are some exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, that's the way it works.
So what would be the most dangerous kind of mosquito that you know of?
The most dangerous one here is the species Culex quinquefasciatus. It's, there's actually two, it's kind of a two species. There's a northern and a southern house mosquito. And they're the ones that transmit the West Nile, and so they would be the most dangerous in this state.
What about the Aedes aegypti?
Aedes aegypti. Yes, that's another nasty one. That's a day-biting mosquito, and it can definitely transmit chikungunya, you know, dengue, those types of things. So that is, if we had that here, I'd be a little more nervous, but we don't.
So that's somebody else's problem.
That's somebody else's problem. Okay. Yeah.
There we go. So here in the West Coast, you know what the curious thing is that how are they, why is the mosquito so pernicious? Why haven't we figured out how to get rid of them like we have the buffalo?
They just have the most amazing breeding ability. You know, they can breed in just about anything. And it just boggles your mind how these things can survive year after year after year. And all it takes is like a little bucket of water, you know, sitting around your house, and there you go. Of course, there's natural buckets out there, like tree holes, for instance. There's a tree hole mosquito, and it just lives in tree holes. And so wherever there's tree holes, you're going to have this aggressive day biting mosquito. And these guys just take advantage of everything. They're incredible.
And it seems like they're adaptable. We learned about the aegypti being able to switch from being a night biter to a day biter, and moving into town and finding places to live in town. And so I wonder about the adaptability and what makes them so adaptable. And I suspect it has something to do with their ability to breed and propagate. And just making experiments very quickly, and that's helps them along down the road, I guess.
Right. Now there have been efforts to genetically modify or use different ways of, you know, sending out sterile males. They're doing a study in Clovis, California, where they release these sterile males into the population. And I believe some of them may have poison on them, or some sort of bacteria that cancels out the egg-laying process. And it was really hard for that district, because they always told the people to call when they see mosquitoes, but now they're pumping mosquitoes out into these neighborhoods, and people are calling, and they're telling them, don't call, we know. So it's just kind of funny, but it did show some success. But, you know, these programs are really expensive.
Yes, and I understand they're conducting one experiment in Florida where they're releasing genetically modified mosquitoes. Have you heard about that?
I haven't. Do you know what they're doing to them?
I don't. I guess genetically modifying them to be sterile or something like that. I don't know what the modification is.
I had heard there was a company called Oxitec that was dabbling in this. And they were working, I think, in Brazil at the time. And they were showing some success. But then I also heard that, you know, the genes weren't supposed to, you know, they were supposed to terminate the mosquito or prevent it from laying eggs. And the genes weren't supposed to get away from them. They weren't supposed to mutate. But what ended up happening was they mutated and got bigger and better and stronger. So,
well, there you go. The Frankenstein, this Frankenstein mosquito, right?
Right, right, right. So that's what I heard. That was a number of years ago, but I hadn't heard about the Florida one.
There you go. Well, okay, so it's one pernicious critter. It's very adaptable. It carries all kinds of diseases. It murders, kills 750,000 people every year. So what is the world doing about this? I mean, it seems like this would be something that science would really be focused on. How do we fix this problem? What are they doing?
Right, right. So,
go ahead.
I don't know. You know, it's just a really, really pervasive problem. You know, it depends on the country's economic status. You know, it depends on what kind of, if you're lucky enough to have a special district to help take care of this. And the thing is, what's so important about a district is that we can go into these wetlands and, you know, we have exemptions to treat them and go in there and take care of those types of things. You know, the average person doesn't have the means to go out into the big field behind them and treat a pond or,
right,
or, you know, take care of that. You know, most people have a hard enough time just keeping up with their lawn. And, you know, time after time, what we see is, you know, there's after the rains, just lots of buckets and things that collect water around people's houses. And that's really the number one, you know, defense people can.
Well, you know, the reason I asked that, Ken, is because in traveling about the jungles of the South Pacific and the Peruvian Amazon and whatnot, I've made an amazing observation. One vision really sticks with me, and that is in the community of Pacalpa on the Rio Ucayali in the Amazon jungles there. We were going down to the river, and we passed through this little village, which had about two blocks of blacktop road, and the rest was gravel. And there must have been 1,000 school children, and just got out of school. They're all in their uniforms. They were bright. They were beautiful. They were healthy. They were just overrunning this little community. It was like a rock concert or something of little school children. And I got to thinking, they must have done pretty good at modifying the impact of malaria there. They must be doing something to, you know, reduce the fatalities. Otherwise, right, why would they have all of these little children running around? And what are they all going to do anyway? And the same is true in Vanuatu. You know, the Vanuatu people used to have big, huge families because not all of the kids would survive. And now they have big, huge families and all the kids survive. And so,
wow,
I just think that we must be doing something right, and I don't know what it is. And I guess that one of the organizations that's really, you know, looking to fix things in this direction would be the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Do you know anything about their efforts?
Not too much. I've seen a couple of talks from people, and they're working to develop new pesticides. They had a few on the horizon, but you know, the thing with the pesticides is we only have a couple of options, and you know, we have the potential to develop resistance within the mosquito populations. So they're working on ways to create new pesticides that are able to treat mosquitoes effectively. And I know they also provide funding. I think they did nothing but nets and sent them to Africa. I know they do quite a bit for impoverished countries.
Yeah. Well, somebody must be doing some good, because there are sure a lot of kids out there, and they sure look healthy to me. So let's turn to what we can do to fight off mosquitoes both locally and at home, which is your expertise. And that is, first thing you do is you vote yourself a mosquito abatement district, and then you use it, right?
Right. Yeah. So, if people are having trouble, they should check to see if they have a mosquito district. Most counties in California do. Sometimes they run out of the ag department. You'll just have to research that. Mm-hmm. But, the simplest thing you can do is, you could if you're noticing mosquitoes, take a look around the yard, maybe ask your neighbors if they have anything that might hold water. Typically, the mosquito problem is going to be really close to where you're getting bit.
Ah.
So,
How far? You just talked about one mosquito that flies, what, 25 miles?
Right, right. But if you don't normally have mosquitoes at your house and then all of a sudden you're noticing them, then it's probably something really close. So they do all have different flight ranges. Some are very weak flyers, and some are definitely stronger than others.
Well, look, I see by your website, you do four different kinds of services for the community. First thing you do is you raise consciousness. Hey, folks, we have a problem here, which is how I came to know you. You called me up and said, hey, folks, we have a problem. And the problem was it rained a lot. And what that means is there's a lot more mosquitoes now than before, right?
Right.
So your job is to let the community know that we're at war.
Right. And it's shocking to me that I still, we do a lot of public education where we're in the schools teaching kids how to be mosquito beaters and, that kind of thing. And so we're educating the children in schools. But with this whole COVID thing, it's kind of stopped, us going into schools. And so we needed to get our message out there, and that's when I contacted you. But I'm always surprised, because, like, at the fairs and stuff, there's people that come to our booth, and they do not know that there was somebody who did that for them, that took care of mosquito problems. I mean, every single time I'm out there, it just boggles my mind. And, we think we're doing such a good job at communicating to the public, but it's shocking to hear that people still don't know that
there is
like
a service. Exists. There are people to help. So you have to raise consciousness. The other thing you have to do, the other job, the other service, source reduction.
Right.
What is that?
Right. So source reduction, source is where the mosquito problem is coming from. And so instead of using pesticides, we like to try to alter the environment, if that means dumping a bucket or, flipping something over. But we also do kind of like habitat manipulation. So we'll go into places like Laguna Seca, the racetrack there. And there's a lot of toolies that grow up in that racetrack. And so we take a mower and we drive through it, and we create these alternating bands of toolies and open ground. And that does two things for us. So that allows us to treat it more effectively. And then if we use something like mosquito fish, they're able to work in there and help us eat the larvae.
Okay.
But what was kind of interesting about Laguna Seca is these places that we mow, the Santa Lucia Conservancy called me up and they said, of course, I was kind of nervous, like, did I wreck something or do we mess something up? And they said, I'm always afraid of that. But they said, can you make your swath width like couple feet wider? And I was like, sure, why? And they said, well, this is the largest tricolor blackbird colony in Monterey County, and we want to try to tweak what you're doing to increase the population. And anecdotally, it's working. So
wow, there you go. Get rid of the mosquitoes and bring on the blackbirds. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to go back and talk about the abatement of mosquitoes, how an abatement district actually goes about abating those mosquitoes. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Ken Clemmy and you right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What? And What's Eating What is mosquito. The mosquito is, in fact, eating us alive. It happens. They stick their little probe right into our skin, go down to the blood vessel, suck up the blood, and there we go. Away we fly with them on the wings of a mosquito, all gone. And in doing so, you know what they do? They bring a lot of diseases, some really frightening diseases like yellow fever, not so much here, but we have our diseases here as well that are really quite frightening, like West Nile. On the East Coast, they have a bunch, and so we have to figure out how to deal with these pernicious little bloodsuckers. And Ken Clemmy knows how to do that because he is a man among mosquitoes. He's the manager of the Northern Salinas Valley Mosquito Abatement District. And so let's go to abating, and that's your job. How do you go about abating mosquitoes?
Right. So abatements, well, there's the legal abatement. If you had a situation where a property owner was not cooperative, there is legal abatement procedures whereby you could start fining that property, you know, for being a public nuisance, you know, per day.
Ah,
we've never had to go down it.
Let's pick that up for a minute. So if your neighbor hasn't drained his swimming pool and there's a bunch of like green water on the bottom of the pool and you say, dear neighbor, please drain your swimming pool, and they look at you, yeah, go,
Right.
There is something that can be done.
Right, right. So it could be, you know, like a dairy lagoon, you know, it could be big sources, little sources, but per source, it would be like $1,000 per day. But I mean, that's an extreme case of like non-cooperation, you know, and we don't seek to go that route, and many districts don't.
Yeah. Well, you try to be a nice guy, of course. And generally that works.
Right. And so basically our district has a blanket warrant. And so like if we're getting noncompliance, or maybe the people are on vacation, or you know, there's something going on. So we would go ahead and leave a notice on the door that you'd be serviced with a warrant. And then we leave like a final notice, and then we give them a time that we're going to be there. And last year we only served two, and it was like an elderly person. And so we asked for like a police escort and that kind of thing. So, back in when marijuana was illegal, it was kind of scary, you know, using a warrant and that kind of thing, because people had mean dogs and they were protecting their grows, you know.
Yeah.
So.
There you
but,
go.
Those are the two most forceful things that we have. But usually people are just compliant. They don't like getting bit. And so we get rid of whatever's on their property. If they have a swimming pool and they can't afford to take care of it, or, you know, it just they don't want to deal with it, we just add mosquito fish to it, and it takes care of the problem for us.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's a nice way to maintain a swimming pool while it's in disrepair.
But what about actually going out into the field and killing the little buggers?
So we have we contract a helicopter across the street, and he either swings a bucket with granules in it that contain, it's a bacillus, it's a type of soil bacterium. and the little mosquito larvae get to eat this stuff, and it, when it gets into their stomach, it adjusts their pH, and they're goners.
Ah.
And so we have that, and we have other types of equipment to get us into the water. But the most exciting new piece of equipment we have, and I really like this, is it's a drone that can treat with pesticides. And so that way we don't have to go down into the muck. You know, we're not wrecking the environment and, you know, doing things. We just set it and forget it. So we have a little program on a iPad, and we just tell it where to go, and it goes and it treats everything for us.
And what kind of pest are we using DDT anymore? Silly question, but
I think in other countries it's still widely used, but not in America.
Okay. What do we use instead?
Not in America. So, like for adults, for adult mosquitoes, you'd use a pyrethrin, which is a chrysanthemum-based pesticide. There are some organic things out there. I don't know that they work that great, but they use botanicals, and it's supposed to achieve the same effect. So those are adult treatments. Larval treatments, you can use what is called methoprene, and what it does is it mimics the juvenile growth hormone, so they don't get any older. It's kind of like the fountain of youth, and they never get into the pupal stage. So the mosquito larvae has to go through complete metamorphosis. It's almost like a butterfly, and so what this product does is it stops them from growing. The Bacillus product, like I mentioned, is also a larval product that works through the gut and kills them. And then, so if you get to a pupal stage and you come to a field and you notice all these pupae are out there, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, what? They're not going to eat this. They're already too late for the juvenile hormone. So then we have like a light mineral oil that we'll apply to the water. It burns off and a couple of hours, and what that does is it stops the pupae from breathing. So they need to attach to the surface, the water tension, and they need to breathe. But what the oil does is it prevents them from attaching, so they can't breathe and they just tire themselves out and die that way.
Wow. There's a number of different things then. Mm-hmm. And then the final job that you do is surveillance.
Right, right. Not the kind of surveillance you're thinking about. But so what we do is we set up traps, right? So we set traps in the neighborhood. Maybe we had a service request where there was a problem. Maybe there was, we noticed some activity somewhere. So we'll set up a trap, and then we kind of generate counts from what we're seeing in the trap.
Okay. So you keep track of things.
And last year, this is the first year we did this. We actually hired a company to fly over. I think they were at a really high, like 10,000 feet or something. I forget where they were, but we hired them to fly and look for green pools, and they found quite a few. I was surprised. And we narrowed it down to about, they use special technology that kind of filters everything out, and it just searches for green pools. It's really kind of neat.
And the green pools, and, of course, are the stagnant pools.
Right. So they could be breeding. And so we sent a letter out, and we had people text back the condition of their pool. And it's kind of interesting because some people are like, yeah, I don't care. Come take care of my pool. And other people, you know, are like kind of embarrassed about the situation. So they don't want to admit that they let their pool go. So they'll try to hide it, you know, and they'll shock it really quick, and they'll throw a bunch of chlorine in it, and it kills everything in there. And you're just glad the problem's over, you know, but it's kind of interesting.
Oh. Hmm.
But we just want to be able to take care of the pool, and be on our way.
Yeah, stop the problem. Let's talk about what we can do at home and for ourselves to protect ourselves from these pernicious little critters. The first thing, of course, as you've mentioned a number of times, is to remove the standing water. And yet people don't, right. Do they?
No. No, they it could be a toy that's holding water. It can be, you know, a tire swing. You know, it could be any number of things, and they just, you know, forget about it. It's not on the radar.
So the first thing people should do is to walk their property and see where water is sitting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if think about a bird bath. What about a bird bath? People in their bird baths.
Some people are pretty good. Some people are not. You know, they freshen them up daily or you know, every other day. But they do breed. Dog dishes breed. Everything that can hold water breeds. It's just,
Yep, there you go.
People always ask me, hey, Ken, I want to put in a fountain. Hey, Ken, I want to put in a koi pond. Hey, Ken, I want to put in a swimming pool. The answer is always no, don't do it, because it's just going to become a problem sooner or later.
How does one, you know, maintain a fountain so that it doesn't become a problem? What do you do?
Well, you know, you got to keep the pump running at all times. You know, as long as it's circulating, it's not going to breed. And just simple maintenance on it. But people put these things in and then they lose interest over time.
Right.
And then it just, I'll get to that. And then that's kind of the point where we're at when we meet these people or make contact. Then it's like, you know, they're tired of the thing. So that's kind of why I developed that attitude. Like, just don't put it in.
And then when it comes down to the neighborhood, too, you have to look at what's happening next to you and around you.
Right.
Because just because you have a fence does not mean the mosquitoes are not going to fly right over that fence. So you have to
you could take a peek through the fence and see if they have anything, you know, or if you suspect it coming from there, you can call us and we handle stuff like that anonymously. But inevitably, every time the person we go to, I know who called, and they point at the right house, and you're like, you know, just trying to keep a straight face. But
and
nobody
gets in
trouble.
When they do call, is there generally a problem?
Yeah.
There is generally a problem.
Nine times out of ten, we find something. Yeah.
And, of course, what about the necessity for installing screens? Do you find people that don't have screens anymore in this neck of the woods?
Well, so we had a situation in Gonzales, and it was near a trailer park, and the people there couldn't afford screens, and they were really getting, I mean, they were getting tore up. It was a difficult source, and they were just being decimated, and they were coming into their houses and that kind of thing. So I do recommend screens, you know, maintaining them, keeping them up. It's those little sneaky guys love to come in through anything, and you want to just make sure that you're using those.
Good. Protect yourself. Amen. Because if you don't protect yourself, they're going to eat you alive. And because that's exactly what mosquitoes do. They eat you alive. What about natural?
Well, the worst.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, in the worst, you know, it's like you're trying to sleep and you can't find the dumb thing that's buzzing your ear, you know, and then you're afraid all night of where is this thing? And then it hides in the closet and you're like, where did it go? And then you go, you know, it's just a pain, you know.
Proof. It's their terrorists. Not only the killers, but they're terrorists.
Absolutely.
Then what about natural repellents? We understand that there are things like citronella candles that may work in certain circumstances. Is that true?
I don't know. I've never really had luck with much of much of that stuff. There was, I mean, they, so much stuff on the internet about, you know, Listerine and bed sheets or the dryer sheets and, you know, different snake oils. It's really, I just always recommend using a product with DEET or, you know, there are some eucalyptus natural type things that are sold by, like SC Johnson.
Yeah.
And, they work well, but they have to be reapplied.
You know, I had a friend who was flying helicopters on the North Slope of Alaska. And he sent me a picture of his flight jacket once, which was just black with mosquitoes. And he said that day that, mosquitoes so bad, he wore so much DEET that it actually melted the cyclic on his helicopter control. So the
wow.
So I thought it's not a place I want to work. Do mosquitoes seem to be more attracted to some people than others? Do you know why that would be?
Well, a lot of times, you know, when it's a man and a woman standing together, they're married. The woman always says they're attracted to him because he's so full of hot air. But
carbon dioxide, right? But,
right. But people do have different chemical makeups and different levels of attractiveness to mosquitoes. But, yeah, it's just based on your chemistry of your body. And they prefer one cut of meat to the other, I guess.
Well, we're just about out of time. One last, what can we do? What's the most important thing for us to do to protect ourselves, Ken?
Well, see if you have a mosquito district. If you're having problems, take care of any standing water around your house. Just be cognizant of you know, what's around you. There may be a pond or a lake or something that we don't know about that. And you know, you could help us out and spot that.
And there we go. We're out of time. But yeah, we want to thank Ken Clemmie, who is the manager of Northern Salinas Valley Mosquito Abatement District. And want to thank all of you for tuning in. Remember, Michael Olson's first law of the food chain, agriculture, is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Thank you, Ken.
All right. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.